I think we'll begin. No, there were no extra Makoros for tonight, although we'll probably have next week, because I want to get through the Gemaras first. What's that? Okay, so it wasn't a mistake. Just we'll do more Makoros on the sheets next week, but today we want to get through some of the Gemaras and just discuss some of the issues. So we began discussing last week the question of Pshara. Which, as we noted, can be translated in different ways. And there's a certain symbolic significance to how you translate it, whether it's a compromise or what we were talking about last week was a mediation or arbitration. The answer is it has elements of all of these, and some of the machloksim is about this. Basically, what we've seen so far is that, broadly speaking, there seem to be two perspectives on pshara. One is that pshara is an abdication of din. Now, do you have din? And contrasted with din is pshara. About din, we say yikov adin asahar. That's truth. That's, you know, judgment or justice. Pshara, if it's shalom or peace, is basically puts or gives priority to peaceful relationship between the parties over and above the principle of truth and justice. The other perspective is, now again, if that's the case, then, you know, when we weigh whether or not it's preferable, as we'll soon discuss, to be operating on the basis of din or pshara, so there's still, room for debate, or even for ambivalence, because we all recognize independently the values of din and of shalom. But the point is that it's a choice between two different values, basically. The other perspective is that pshara itself is a form of din, by which we mean that it's not anything that will further tranquil relations between the parties or even tranquility in society, but that you are looking for a more flexible, more fine-tuned, but still, a more a fairer, if you will, application of din, of justice. And the idea behind that would be that typically din is objectified, by which we mean that in order to have laws on the books, they have to be fair, and they have to apply equally, right, to all the different segments of society, all things being equal, and across different types of societies, meaning over, you know, centuries or even millennia, across different cultural milieu and geographic locations. So, the result is that you have to take into consideration all sorts of, circumstances. There needs to be a lot of what we call low plugs. There needs to be a lot of siyagim, right? You have to consider numerous eventualities and, you know, potential abuses of the system, etc. Now, sometimes that can interfere with a more just conclusion if you're focusing on justice, right, in a narrower sense. If you're only interested in these two balei dinim and in the here and now vikuach debate between them or the dispute between them, there might be a way, even according to the same principles of law, in this case halakha, to solve the problem more efficiently, even, more precisely. For example, you wouldn't have to as much, have a zero-sum game. And just say, if Reuven is Zakai, then Shimon is Chai. What you might say is, well, given these circumstances, it's a 75-25. There are mitigating circumstances here that, cause us to, to adjust the rules a little bit, but according to the principles of the rules. This perspective of pshara, then, isn't shalom versus din, it's objective din right, across all circumstances, as opposed to fine-tuned, more particularly applied din in this particular case. And then the question of what is preferred, din or pshara, takes on a completely different perspective, right? It's not a question of a clash between two important but very different values. Instead, it's more of an internal assessment whether or not, in this particular case, we're going to go with conventional, right, low plug across the board din, or we're going to go with an adjusted, more flexible, in a way more ambitious kind of din. Okay, so these are the two options that we were looking at. Methodologically, you know, if we were trying to think what would indicate one approach or the other, so at minimum, in terms of the direction, what we'd be thinking is as follows. Let's try to figure out whether or not the trappings of din, meaning that the requirements that are normally associated with din, do they apply on some level to pshara as well? The more that they apply, right, the more cumulatively likely it is that pshara itself is a form of din. The more that the typical, you know, applications of din are not applicable to pshara, the more likely that pshara has nothing to do with din. It's, I wouldn't say the antithesis of din, but it is a competitive value, one which competes with din, in other words, and therefore these rules don't apply. So, for example, we're going to see in a couple of minutes, like, how many dayanim do you require? There might be other explanations, but at first blush, do you require the same amount of dayanim in pshara as in din? Right, an interesting question. Is there a din of ta'us, right, in pshara? That may be a very good example. In the same way that there's a din of ta'us in din. There's a din of ta'us in din because there's a single proper answer. And, you know, it's extremely precise. You know, it's a precision kind of discipline. And if you get the wrong answer, so then we have to assess the consequences. And then we can discuss, you know, what kind of wrong answer? Ta'us b'dvar mishnah, ta'us b'shikol hadas. Some of the issues, the last Gemara that we actually read, on Vav Amud Aleph. So in din, the idea of malpractice and mistake and levels of mistake is extremely reasonable. But is there a notion of mistake when it comes to pshara? How can there be a mistake? It's a question of imposing peace upon the parties. So you can't make a mistake because there's no response, there's no single answer anyway.
That's in the first kind of pshara.
I'm sorry?
Not necessarily in the second kind of pshara. You should be able to make a mistake if your attempt at flexibility
contradicts
basic principles.
Right. This is what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, if we take the first perspective, which is that pshara is shalom and is the antithesis of din, or at least it's not din, then the notion of a mistake is a strange idea. But if we take the second view, which is that pshara is, in some respects, a more ambitious form, a different form, but a more ambitious form of din, then of course you can make a mistake because it's driven by the principles of din. And if you get those principles wrong or you get the proportions wrong, then you have a very serious mistake on your hands. So the idea of Rabbi Kivager brings this up. Rabbi Kivager says that there's a notion of ta'us and even malpractice in pshara, just like there is in din. And others think that just doesn't make any sense. They're totally different concepts. Or, for example, something we saw last week in the Tshuvas HaRajba, and that is the idea of Eini Yodea. Let's say you have a regular dayan who says Eini Yodea. We spent 2 weeks analyzing that issue and problem, very fascinating problem in the law, right? Eini Yodea Ki'isa, Eini Yodea Kelesa, and so on and so forth. But it certainly is it obvious that the status of a judge in pshara who says Eini Yodea is identical to the status of an Eini Yodea judge, you know, in din? It might be, because there is a parallel, but it's certainly not so obvious. So when the Rajba in a tshuva said that, you know, the same halacha, exact halacha applies, and then added for good measure the comment that, demai shna, like, why wouldn't it? What do you mean, why wouldn't it? Because this is about din, and that's about shalom. So maybe they're totally different. I mean, you might still argue that there's a common denominator, an overlapping idea that applies equally to both. That's not impossible, structurally. But the point is, it isn't as obvious. The more we see pshara as a form of din, the easier it is to explain that default. By default, I mean automatically, we're going to start off assuming that the rules of din apply to pshara. And then, you know, if we decide that the extra flexibility and so on, you know, makes for a different conclusion, that's fine. But at least initially, we're not going to be surprised if the number of dayanim is the same, if the din of enyodeh is the same, if the din of tos is the same. Is there kfiya in pshara? Well, there's no kfiya to force people to accept pshara per se, because the default is that everybody has access and the right to din, as we discussed. And soon we're going to read the Gemara, where the Gemara has a discussion whether pshara even may not require a kinyan, which we'll discuss. But so the idea that there is no kfiya in the sense of forcing balei dinim who don't want to, you know, who are interested in din, you can't force them into a pshara. However, having agreed, right, on some level to pshara, even if they didn't agree to the specifics of the pshara, right, what happens then? Is there a din of kfiya or not? That too seems to be a major debate. That's only if they accept the concept of pshara. Yeah?
I want to define pshara. Is pshara compromise?
So that's what we're going to discuss.
And does compromise mean split the difference? Or pshara can mean 25-75?
It definitely doesn't mean an equal compromise. It never means that. It's always in the eyes of the judges to come up with the proper fair settlement. But what we're discussing is that proper fair settlement based on the impact that it'll have on peace? Is that the driving force? In other words, if I'm a negotiator or an arbitrator or a mediator, and they're all probably a little bit different, but if my goal in the end of the day is to reimpose tranquility and harmony and good feelings, then I might come to one kind of conclusion. If my goal in the end of the day is with flexibility to come up with the most just solution, then it's going to be a different one. So this is the debate that we're discussing. But there's certainly no rule that says you split the difference. That's for sure not.
We say we're starting, when we go to pshara, we're starting from Hagadah Sfaldin. There's a Hagadah Sfaldin. He's already telling you in advance he's not completely right. Because he's going to arbitration. He's going to pshara.
Not really, not necessarily. First of all, there are two things to think about. Number one, the balei dinim may believe that they're right, but that doesn't mean that they necessarily trust the system, right, to come to the right conclusion. Right? I might believe self-righteously or just, you know, whatever, that I am right. But maybe I don't trust the system to come to that conclusion. The witnesses, I don't have witnesses in this case. I know that I'm right, but I just don't have witnesses. Or the witnesses are too weak, and so on. That's one. The other is that the balei dinim sometimes prefer pshara for the same reason that society prefers a pshara. Namely, Reuven and Shimon, after this is all over, would rather not live in acrimony. They'd rather be able to, you know, to come to each other's homes, you know, with a half smile on their face. They'd rather be able to do another business deal together. So sometimes it's worth it for Reuven, who knows that he's really in the right, to compromise with Shimon, because it just, in the longer run, it's a constructive way to be. So the fact that somebody accepts a pshara over a din is not really a hodas bal din that he is not in the right. There could be other factors that would be responsible for that.
Could be,
right? Right? Well, in the halacha, really, the cost shouldn't be the issue. But in real life, that certainly can be. Yeah, yeah.
Well, when there's a mutually exclusive argument, one person says la visi, the other one says la hadam.
Right, that's a different story.
How can you...
right, so that's probably not...
How can you... Sure.
Right, there may not... No one ever said that there's a pshara in all cases, either. Right? I mean, we're talking about a case where there is room for pshara, but there's still a din, and the question is, you know, din or Pshara. Okay. Let me just highlight this a little further before we go on. So I mentioned something last time. We're in the middle of Vavmud Aleph. We're going to pick up with that Gemara in just a minute. But first I want to mention two other issues very quickly. One is the one that we mentioned last time that I want to expand just a little bit. And that is the concept of Asisa HaYashar Vatov. Again, the Pasuk in Shoftim, which says, do the righteous and the good, Asisa HaYashar Vatov, and in which Rashi says, that gives two examples. One is Bar Metzra, again, the neighbor on the border who has the right of first acquisition or first purchase, right? And the other one that he quotes is Pshara. And the Ramban likewise quotes these two cases, Pshara. But what's particularly interesting is the Ramban, because in Rashi it's hard to know what Lifnim Mishur Sadin or Vasisa Yashar Vatov means, you know, for Rashi. The words Lifnim Mishur Sadin, right, can mean extra credit, you know. When you talk about something being, you know, supererogatory or extra credit or beyond the actual technical letter of the law, right, do we mean to say that it is outside the law? Right? Or do we mean to say that although it isn't obligatory and enforceable, right, this is a higher expression of the law itself? So on that, that's an interesting question, right? What does Lifnim Mishur HaSadin mean? So the Ramban, famously, in his Perush, there in Shoftim, takes the second view. Ramban says, Lifnim Mishur HaSadin doesn't mean extra credit, you know, voluntary, not part of the law. What it means is not enforceable, but the value, the hashkafa, that stems from and that radiates out of the halacha. And that's how the Ramban links it up with Kedoshim Tiyu, Al Tehi Naval B'Shus HaTorah, and with the Mitzvah Saseh of Shabbos, where he says, like we discussed last week, you know, that you could keep your businesses open. If all you cared about was Lamentas Melachos, technically, narrowly, right, you could build an Eruv, right? You don't have to write down, or you can write it down in such a way that you don't violate a Doraisa. You could keep your store open, have business. You could have a completely unrecognizable Shabbos. And the Ramban says, Min HaTorah, you would be missing Shabbos, the Aseh of Shabbos. So the Ramban says that the Mitzvah Aseh of Shabbos, which is about the spirit of Shabbos, the concept of Kedoshim Tiyu, Al Tehi Naval B'Shus HaTorah, don't exploit loopholes in the halacha, right, to technically be compliant, even though you are trampling on these values. And the third, Vasisa Yashar Vahatov, all these three basically reflect an idea where the letter of the law, right, is well, this is beyond the letter of the law, but it is part of the halacha, it's part of the system of the law itself. So by extension, when the Ramban says that, and of course this works very well for Dina de Bar Metzra, but when he says that this also applies to Pshara, then by implication the Ramban seems to be subscribing to our second view. He seems to be saying that Pshara isn't an abdication of law. Pshara is applying the law even in a more ambitious manner. That's one issue I wanted to bring to your attention. The second one is the Gemara here on Lamed Beis, Omid Beis. A very interesting Gemara. And the question is, what? How does it fit into the other things we've been discussing? So the Gemara here is on Lamed Beis, Omid Beis, says as follows. Rav Ashi Omer Masisin Kiddushaninan. Okay, let's go a little earlier. Okay. One second. Let's go four lines down, five lines down. Kidurei Shlokish. Is it five lines? Yeah. On Lamed Beis on Beis. Kidurei Shlokish. Kidurei Shlokish Rami. Rei Shlokish pointed out that there seemed to be a stira or two different psukim, right? Ksiv, in one pasuk it says, Betzedek Tishbot Amisecha. Right? Ksiv, it also says, Tzedek, Tzedek Tirdov. Right? So what's the point of these two psukim? So the Gemara says, Hoketzad. First answer the Gemara gives is Kan Din Maruma, Kan Bedin She'enu Maruma, which is a fascinating halacha. The Dayanim, then we'll get back to it anyway, just for a very brief moment, the Dayanim have a certain prerogative, right? When they think something is fishy, something is just quite not right, even though technically, formally, everything seems to be fine, they're given flexibility and latitude to work outside of the system based on their instinct in those circumstances. That's called the din of Meruma. If you have a Rambam just for a second, I don't have sheets today, so we have to. The Rambam Nichol Sanhedrin has a whole chapter on this, very fascinating chapter. This is the Tshuvas HaRosh, which I also will make reference to in just a minute. I'll just read to you a little bit. That's called the Din Meruma. Perek Chav Dalid of Hilchos Sanhedrin. Just, I'll read you a couple of lines. You'll see what I'm talking about. The Rambam says, Yesh l'dayan ladun b'dinei mamonos, especially in dinei mamonos, the dayan has the right to be done, al pi advarim shadata notelahen, based on his assessment, his instinct, shehein emes, v'adavar chazak bilibo. In other words, the judge is not just a technician. He's not just a computer terminal. You know, he gets a little input and he spits out an answer. He's a human being who has been trained, right? He's a walking Sefer Torah, hopefully, and he his instinctive response to what's going on in his presence is part of his responsibility as well, right? Hadavar chazak b'libo shehu kein. Afal pi she'ein sham raya brura, even though he can't point to an absolute evidence. Bein tzorek lomar ha'yodea b'vadei shadavar kein shehu dan kefi mashiyeda. He needs to trust his instincts. Mostly 90% of cases go by the facts and by the testimony. And there's a certain flexibility in din. It's very important to know that the dayan has a certain flexibility judging according to his own integrity. Ketzad. Harishin eschayv adam shvua bebezdin. Ramal dayan adam ne'aman etzlo. He thinks that the person is about to be nishba and walk away and win the case is a liar. That's part of the din in the sugyas and masechet shvuah. He can decide, you know what? I don't want him to swear. I want the other guy to swear. I trust him more. And then he goes on. You can see what's going on here. He's using his instinct a lot. And so on. And he goes on and gives numerous examples of this. Of course, the flexibility of a dayan is going to work better when we know that the dayanim are very competent, right? Then the instinctive reliance upon them, you know, is part of the system. Once the standards for judges becomes weaker, ironically but understandably, going according to the book, you know, becomes more important to protect the totality of the system. Okay, and then this is how he explains and so on, schema robot din yisro shalei hapkushu, and so on, all these protections and so on. I mean, I'm a dayan shiodea b'din shehu meruma, and how do you know that in the case of a dayan who knows there's something, you know, fishy going on, there's something false going on in front of him, even though everything is technically within, you know, proper laws. Shalei yomra, maybe he should just be able to say, not my problem, the system, if they're lying, it's on them, you know. Achat chena, right, achatchenu, sorry. V'yeh hakolar talui b'tzavar ha'edim. Like, he thinks likely the edim are lying here. So let him say, you know what? He doesn't have any proof. He can't prove it. You know, I'm doing my job, and it's all on them, right? So Talmud Lomar midvar sheker tirchak. Midvar sheker tirchak doesn't only mean, it's a fascinating thing, right? Doesn't only mean not to lie. You shouldn't lie. It also means not being part of something, right, which is false. So if you have a strong instinct, even though you can't prove it, even though it's their fault that they're lying, you can't be associated with that entire procedure. Fascinating. Ketzad yasebo, yidrosh v'yachkor harbe, you have to walk the extra mile. you know, to interrogate more, bedrisha v'chakira shaldin nefasho simnir lalafidaito sheinbo remius chotech hadin al piya edus. If he's satisfied, great. You don't normally have drisha v'chakira on din emaminus, right, midrabanan, but we'll impose it if we need it for because we're worried about din meruma. Avalimay libo nokfo, right, sheyeshbo din remius. If in the end he's done everything he can, his conscience is bothering him, right? He feels that there's something wrong here. Whether it's the Bali Dinim or the Edim, he doesn't have the means to disqualify them objectively. This litigant is a liar. Maybe he bribed the Edim. The stuff that he's not hearing about, relevant, you know, information. As a matter of integrity, if he's not happy, he should withdraw. We'll talk about withdrawing for other reasons. He can't withdraw out of fear. But if he withdraws out of integrity, that's appropriate. And then he goes on and he elaborates, you know, these ideas. That's the din of din meruma. Okay. Anyway, so the Gemara basically says there are two types of din. Right? It's already fascinating. There's b'tzedek tishbar amisecha, and then there's something called tzedek tirdof. Right? Kan, that's the first day of the Gemara. Kan b'din meruma, kan b'din she'ena meruma. Okay. Rav Ashi Amar, no. Ma'asis in Kiddushanin and Kiddushaninan, cry, Echad Ladin, the Echad Lipshara. Kedatanya, Tzedek Tirdof, Echad Ladin, the Echad Lipshara. So the second view in the Gemara is no, these two psukim, right, refer, these two types of din, it's not din maruma, but din shayna maruma. It's din and pshara. So two things are very interesting before we get to the case, which is interesting. So Rashi explains here. One second. Yeah. Aval kroy, derami lei resh lakish lo kashu. Everybody have that? The tzedek lav le drisha ulechakirasi ela tzedek din shocha v'tzedek pshara shocha lefi ruusei necha. So the word tzedek tirdof, according to Rashi, tzedek means din, and the other tzedek means pshara. What's fascinating is if you look at the Yad Ramah on this Gemara, the Yad Ramah says, no, that's not the pshat of the Gemara. The pshat of the Gemara is that there are two psukim, not the two tzedeks of tzedek tirdof, tzedek din, tzedek pshara. Fine. The way the Ramah says, no, it's the other way. B'tzedek tishbar amisecha, that's din. Tzedek tirdof, that whole pasuk, that's pshara. So the Ramah says, why tzedek, why double tzedek? He says, because when you're fine, I'm adding a little bit, but when you're fine-tuning din, it requires a double dose of tzedek. In other words, the Ramah basically says that tzedek, the double tzedek, is a higher form of din, not that it's shalom versus din. Now with Rashi, it's interesting, it's hard to know, because Rashi's saying one pasuk, tzedek tirdof, refers to din and pshara. So you don't get the benefit of the Ramah's drasha of double tzedek, right, and the contrast between the two. But on the other hand, in the same pasuk, you have din and pshara. Anyways, what's fascinating is look at the case. The case of the Gemara is Ketzad. Shtei Svinos, Ovros Benahar. You have two boats, right? In the shipping lanes, right? Upagu Zebazeh, and you reach, I guess, a certain narrow point in the river. And the question is, who's going to go first? Im Ovros, Shteyem, Tovos. If they're both going to go, you know, to grab, to cross at the same time, they're both going to sink. B'zeh achar zeh, right, shtei en ovros. Or Kein Shnei Gemalim, right? It doesn't matter, you know. It doesn't matter if it's boats or it's Gemalim, right? Shehayu Olim B'malos Beis Choron. They're going up a narrow, you know, mountain. U'pagu Zeh B'Zeh. Imalu Shneim Noflim. B'Zeh Achar Zeh Shneim Olim. Hakeitzad. So what do you do? Te'una V'Sheina Te'una Tidacha She'ina Te'una B'Pnei Te'una. If one is loaded up with a burden, so the one with the burden should go first. Right? Krova, v'sheina krova, tidacha krova, v'pnei sheina krova. If one is closer, right? So that's a factor.
Closer to what?
To the goal.
What's that?
They're closer. They're coming together. What do you mean closer?
To where it's going.
Oh, okay. Hayu shteim krovos, shteim rechokos, hatel pshara b'neim, if there's no objective way to figure out who's going to suffer, let's say, a greater setback, basically, then what they do is they make a financial accommodation one with the other. Okay. So this is a very fascinating Gemara. What's fascinating about this Gemara...
This is an example of Shara, right?
Yes. Yeah, and therefore? Did you want to say something about it?
No.
Oh, I thought there was like, see, I always, you know...
I'm not always that sharp.
You know, I'm like, there's such depth there. I'm so belamed tzchus, I thought you wanted to say the whole point. Okay, so, but what...
Is the... are the first cases also cases of pshara, or are they...
That is a good question.
It is pshara that's like those all...
The Gemara only says the words pshara, so maybe you could say that it's only in the end with the money, you mean.
Yeah.
But there seems to be a debate. The pashtus of the Gemara is that they're all cases of pshara. There are some Rishonim who argue that only the end case is pshara. But the bigger point is as follows, especially in the early cases. Are these the typical pshara, which is what I was saying, is this the typical pshara case that we're talking about in the above?
No.
The cases on the above, and some of the Achronim point this out, you know, the Rishonim don't say it explicitly, but it's a very important ha'ara, and that is, in the cases of the above, right, there is a din. And there is a din, and there's a default of din. Right? And then the question is, what if the Bali Dinim opt for pshara? Correct? And of course, as we were discussing, you know, that also leaves open the possibility. Either we're abandoning, right? We're abdicating din, right? Or since there is a din, so we're using the principles of din to fine tune this particular solution, right? However, on the Amud Beis, there basically is no din.
Why? Korov and Rachok is din.
Well, no. Korov and Rachok is a din.
That's a din.
It's not really halachically din. Meaning, if two people are traveling, just because one person has longer to go, it doesn't give him any more rights, really.
That's what the Torah is saying. It does have that.
Right, but Torah's pshara, b'pashtas. Or let's say, in other words, if your neighbor is carrying a bigger load than you are, why does that give him the right of... Not put it this way, not in the same sense that two people who have a din Torah with each other... And the question is, you know, who does he owe him money? You know, is this included in the obligation? In other words, there's a reasonable, especially if we want to try to reduce loss, you know, the conclusions here are reasonable, but they're not rights or obligations that Reuven has over Shimon or Shimon has over Reuven. I mean, Reuven and Shimon are you know, ferrying these two boats down the river. They don't know each other. They have no relationship with each other. They certainly don't have any contractual relationship with each other. So let's say Shimon needs to go further than Reuven, or Shimon has a bigger load than Reuven. Why is that Reuven's problem? Where does he even come to Shimon? Right? Meaning the right thing to do, the fair thing to do, the proper thing to do, yes, but not based on a legal relationship. That's not the same as what's going on Daf Vav, where we're talking about Reuven and Shimon have a Din Torah, meaning... They have a contractual relationship. They have a nezek relationship. This is something that is going to be handled through Hilchos Shechinim, Hilchos Nizkei Mamon, Hilchos Mechira. I'm just picking. Hilchos Tohen V'Nitan. Right? There are rules and there are, you know, solutions. And it's all based on, you know, this this real chiyuv one to the other. Here the question isn't the chiyuv of one to the other. It's the question of whether Reuven's plight takes a priority over Shimon's plight. Right? So there's an element of fairness here, but there's not really a, typically an element of din. There's no alternative of din. All there is the pshara. So it's fascinating, just I'll take the question in one more second, is what's fascinating is that the Rambam, if you look at the Os Beis and Os Gimel and Dalet here in Ein Mishpat, Ner Mitzvah, it tells you something. The Rambam quotes these halachos where? In Perek Yud Gimel, Hilchos Rotzeach. What? He doesn't quote them where? In Perek, well, you don't have to have the Perek number, but in Perek Chav Beis of Hilchos Sanhedrin, which is where he quotes the dinim of Pshara. Right, the dinim of Pshara are here in Perek Chav Beis of the Sanhedrin, right, where the Rambam quotes, Shaim Shibalefanecha Ledin, that's the first halacha about Osogurum Ipneish, why that's there, interesting also. But then he goes on to say, in Halacha Gimel, after he finishes with Osogurum Ipneish, Uminayin Latalmid Sharoas. I'm sorry. Halacha Dalet. Mitzvah loma labali din and betchila bedin. Atem rotsim o bedin atem rotsim o bepshara. Im rotsim bepshara osa benayim pshara. From halacha dalet, from perek chapez halacha dalet until the, almost till the end of the perek, the Rambam deals with the dinim of pshara. So how come he didn't quote the pshara of lamed beis from the beis? Right together. The answer is, for the Rambam, it sounds like these are two different ideas, very little to do with each other. However, what's fascinating is that the Shulta Giborim, which we'll discuss in just a couple of minutes, the Shulta Giborim, when he talks about Pshara, links the two sugyas together. Thinks it's the same sugya. Lamed Beis, he says, "Oh, how do you know where there's a din of Pshara anyway?" He says, "Oh, it's the Gemara Daf Lamed Beis, Tzedek Tzedek Tirdof." Right, echad the din, echad the pshara, or like the Rama, betzedek tishpara misecha versus tzedek tzedek tirdof. So what's interesting is if you look at Rabbeinu Tam and Sefer Yashar, the Rosh and Achuva also seem to say this, and the Netziv says this in his Perush al Torah. They seem to make this distinction. They talk about the fact that there are two types of pshara. There's a pshara when there is a din. Right, that's one kind of a pshara. And then there's a different kind of pshara where there is no din. And maybe this second kind of pshara, the pshara of lamed beis lamed beis, is subject, for example, to kviya. Maybe you can enforce that. Whereas you can't enforce a pshara in the context of din, obviously, because you have the option of din. Yeah?
If I could just be mekayim, see sof dovos mekaber for a second.
What's that?
See sof dovos mekaber. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik used to say, yeah. Said it's a tear of the, in the Targum Onkelos, it's kushto be kushto. He said, this is the marker that the ends don't justify the means.
Interesting. Means you have to you have to pursue tzedek with in a tzedektic way.
He used to say that all the time.
Very good. Excellent.
Question.
Yeah.
Am I nitpicking, but the Lord doesn't...
Default? Chazaka?
Let me nitpick.
Okay.
Because the Gemara seems to suggest, or this, what does it say?
Since I gave you the compliment before, so I can raise the question now.
This case,
yeah.
This case gives the two cases, sets up certain framework where one has a priority, and this one suggests that this is a shuffle. Then it goes... To hayu shteim krovos, shteim rechokos. In other words,
right. This is the question that was asked before. Oh. Right. Yeah. I think I mentioned before. Most Rishonim think that all of this is pshara, but there are some Rishonim who think. Yeah, but some of the Rishonim think that only that last part is pshara.
Because of the way the Gemara formulated.
Yeah. 100%. So, anyways, this is a very interesting issue. Namely, is the pshara here the pshara where? We're talking really not about a relationship between each other, as I say, but the question of general priorities and fairness. Fairness reducing loss objectively reducing the loss as a factor, right, in giving priority, right, whether or not that is the same as the pshara that, you know, we talk about when, you know, mediating between bali dinim, when there's also an option of din, that is a debate, and one which, again, is very relevant to what we're talking about here. Okay? Yeah?
Rambam brings all these cases to Hilchos Rosh Tzeach, only the first two, the Sfina and the Gamma. But does he bring them all to Hilchos
Rosh Tzeach? I think he brings, I mean, or does he also bring splitting the money? I think so. I'll have to check it again. I believe so. You have it?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. Oh, you have it in the back of your Gemara? They have these fancy Gemaras. So good. Good. What do they have? Go ahead.
So the whole halachic?
What is it? Yud Gimel?
Yud Bet.
Yeah, Yud Beis. Yeah, go ahead.
It says, V'chein sh'tei sfinos ha'ovros v'bogo zo v'zo, im ovros sh'tem v'vas achas tovos, v'im v'zo achar zo ovros. V'chein sh'nei gemalim ha'olim v'mala gavoa, v'fagu zeh v'zeh, im ovrim sh'neihem v'vas achas no'chlim v'im v'zeh achar zeh olim. Ketzah hinosim, tuna v'sheina tuna, tuna, tidacha sheina tuna v'bnei atuna. Krova rechoka tidacha krova v'nei sheina krova. Shtein rechoko so krova so tunos ho v'kulan v'dochak. Echad hat, v'dochak echad, hatel pshara v'neihem v'hein malo schar zeh l'zeh. Uvazek v'chayotze bo nemar v'tzedek tishvot amitecha.
So again, is he only going on the last part, or is he also going on that's not as clear either. Right.
The
fact that he brings them all seems to
what? You know, he brings them all, which would think to say that they're all one halakha. Right. On the other hand, the language, just like in the Gemara, is centered on the end cases more.
He uses the pasuk tzedek tishvot amitecha, not tzedek.
Yeah, that's the other thing I wanted to mention. I intended to mention that. I mean, Rashi says that both of them are, you know, tzedek tzedek. Both of them are tzedek tzedek. Echad l'din, echad l'pshara. The Rama thinks that tzedek tishvot amitecha is din, and tzedek tzedek tirdof is pshara, because you need more wisdom and more tzedek. And the Rambam in Hilchos Rosh Tzeach seems to say the opposite, and that is that tzedek tishvot amitecha goes on the pshara. Presumably, he thinks that tzedek tzedek is what goes on the din. Yeah.
Does the word tirdof indicate that that's preferable as pshara? The fact that they're using the word tirdof by tzedek.
Interesting. I mean, to pursue, to run after it. Interesting. Very well could be. I just wanted to add one other thing, and that's that the Tshuva Sarash, in a famous Tshuva, which is also quoted by the, partly quoted in Shulchan Aruch, and definitely quoted by the Shach in Shulchan Aruch. This is the Shulchan Aruch that deals with a Pshara, as you readily will be able to see, is Simid Yud Beis, which also begins with Lo Sogurum Ibnei Ish for some reason, the Halacha Aleph. In the Sugya also they're connected, in the Rambam they're connected. Lo Sogurum Ibnei Ish, and then transitions into a whole simen regarding Pshara. Anyways, this Tshuva Sarash is quoted very prominently in Shulchan Aruch and in the Poskim. So the Shulchan Aruch, like the Rambam, you know, has a whole discussion about Din Beruma and how the, you know, there are circumstances in which we rely heavily on the instinct of the Dayan. But what he adds that the Rambam doesn't add is he says, in a way, isn't that what Pshara is all about? Relying on the instinct, you know, of the legal instincts of the Dayan, you know, to make a better, you know, just, equitable, you know, solution. So he considers Pshara, right, to be an example in a way, or something parallel to like Din Beruma, where you're relying on the instincts of the judge. Again, not arbitrary, not for the sake of Shalom, but a better, a more finely tuned tzedek, in a way. Right. Exactly. So, again, another expression of this, if you want to see it.
Why the Rambam puts it in
Hilchos as opposed to other places?
Why he puts this Pshara in Hilchos
Rosh Tzeach? Well, I was just emphasizing that it's not in Sanhedrin and he thinks it's a different din. No, in that area of Hilchos Rosh Tzeach, he talks about other things too, other priorities and so on. But I just wanted to show that it's not a Pshara of din, where the Shulta Gibarim does think it is kind of that. So just look, if you get a chance for a minute, at the Shulta Gibarim, the language of the Shulta Gibarim. We don't have the whole thing here. It's on page 2. Aleph Omid Beis in the Dape Harif. Oh, you don't have it there. Yeah. Aleph Omid Beis in the Dape Harif. The Shilta Giborim here makes a distinction between two types of pshara. One is what he calls the pshara of the Dayanim, right, where the Balidinim accept that they will be makabel pshara, and then the Dayanim impose the pshara. In other words, they don't have to get an agreement about the details. They just have to get an agreement that there's going to be a pshara. Now, do you Balidinim agree that you will follow our, you know, conclusion? Yes. Then the details are imposed on the Balidinim at that point, right? As opposed to the pshara in which the Dayanim sell or try to sell a particular conclusion to the Balidinim, to be Mephias then. So you'll see this in a moment. So the second one he thinks, sorry? Aleph Omid Beis. No, yeah, Simina. Os Aleph. Yeah. So it says here, Ad Shelo Nigmar Adin. We'll get to this in a minute. Rashai Hadayan Lahatil Pshara Beinayim. Right? Afabi Sheodea Lahechan Adin Nota. Aval. We'll get this in the Gemara. Misha Nigmar Adin V'Amar Lahem Ish Ploni Ataz Zaka Ish Ploni Atachayev Ein Adayin Rashai Lipater Beinayim. So now the Riyaz start. That's a Gemara. The Riyaz says as follows. B'nir Be'enai She'ein kol advar malolo amurim, ela kishe dayanim rotsim lahatil pshara kefi hanira be'enehem, v'shalo midas balidinim. These rules about how late, you can switch to pshara, we'll get to this in a minute, apply only in the pshara that is imposed by the dayanim, when the dayanim are using their own instincts, their own legal wisdom, right, to make a pshara between the parties, so then it can't be too late in the process. In other words, if you have a din Torah between two parties, and then you pronounce judgment already, or you know that you reached the judgment, you're not allowed to switch to pshara. We'll see in a moment in the Gemara at that point. Because, right, aval imhe modi imlahem tiva pshara, umefaisim odsam adhe misratzim Limchal echad lechavero olotes echad lechavero davar yadua afilo achar gmardin roi lasoskein ubilvad shalia shum tzad hechreach bedavar el piusim u pituyim, I think it says, v'zuhi mitzvah gedola v'hi avos shalom benon lechavero v'kach haya inyano shal aron oev shalom. So this is the shulta, you don't have the full shulta gibarim here. In the Kuntras Hariyaz that's published, there's a group of, used to be black, I don't know if they're still black, Svarim, called Sanhedri Gedola or Ketan, I don't remember. like a series on Sanhedrin, the Tosa Rosh, they put out the Miri. Anyway, one of the things they put out was the Kuntras Hariyaz. This is from the Riyaz. So they have a much more expansive version of this, in which the Riyaz really says that the yesod of there are two types of psharas. Like you see part of it here. The pshara of Balidinim can take place anytime, because that's just pure shalom. Right? And that's where you have a result already. This is the, like, you know, let's put our heads together. Let's forget about din. Let's do the peaceful, harmonious, you know, tranquil thing. Let's think about the future and peace, right? And harmony.
We've already pronounced Zakai and Chayim.
Even after pronouncing Zakai and Chayiv, if you can convince the Balidinim to go along with this, that is totally fine. I mean, why would they go along with it?
Why would the Zakai go along with it?
No, it's one of the reasons I said before, because some people, you know, it have a bigger picture, thankfully. In other words, you want to be right?
Yeah.
Or do you want... There you go. You want to be right, or do you want to, live in a harmonious... you know, community, and even from a business point of view. Do you want to be right? You know, and you'll win the extra three grushim or whatever, or would you like to continue to do, a profitable business with this person? Now, sometimes, as a matter of principle, you can't get to let people get away with things either, or if he's dishonest and so on, then you maybe don't want to do... I'm not saying it always works this way. What I'm saying is, there can be very good reasons, to... even to opt for a pshara you know, under certain conditions. So what the Riyaz is saying is there are two types of pshar. There's a pshar bali dinim. That's pure havas shadon shalom baran b'chamer. That's what Aharon HaKohen was about. Because the Gemara associates Aharon HaKohen with pshar. The problem Rishonim had was, what do you mean Aharon HaKohen is pshara? Aharon HaKohen is going to go against Moshe Rabbeinu? Yikov HaDin is Zahar. Who could go against Moshe Rabbeinu? Some of the Rishonim said, no! Moshe Rabbeinu stood for Din, Aharon stood for Pshara, too. Eilu ve'elu divra l'kim chayim, you know. That's the approach of some of the Rishonim. Some of the Rishonim said, no. Obviously, what we're saying is that Aharon HaKohen is the paradigm of Pshara, and Moshe Rabbeinu is the paradigm of Din. But that doesn't mean they clash, ever. So, for example, we'll see in a moment, Rashi says, or Tosa says, Aharon wasn't playing the role of Dayan, it was before they went to Din. The answer of the Riyaz to this problem, he too didn't want to say that it's a clash or that it's a machlokas. So what he says is, no. Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, was about Din. You know, and even then there's room for pshara, but not too late. Because it's part of Din that it's inconsistent at a certain point. But the shalom of Aharon HaKohen, right, the pshara of Aharon HaKohen was a shalom, not a different kind of Din. There are two types of pshara. The pshara of the dayanim, which is a form of din, and which is according to klalim of the halacha, and then there's the pshara of the bali dinim, and which also has limitations in terms of when you can switch to it, not too late in the process. And then there's another din, pshara, of pius, and pitui, and shalom. That's the one of Aharon HaKohen. That's interesting. Okay, let's continue in the Gemara. We'll see how some of these things play out here. So the Gemara says as follows. We're in the middle of Vava Med Aleph. The Gemara says, Lema Ketanoi. Right? The Gemara says, maybe it's a Machlokas Tanoi. Now again, if you remember, the background of the Gemara here was, the Gemara wasn't really talking about Pshara at all. It got into Pshara because it was really talking about Shmuel. Shmuel said that Shnaim Shadanu Dineim Din, and Rabbi Avo disagrees and said, not true. Right? So, the Gemara says, Lema Kitanoi. Right? Let's say that there's a, maybe this is a Machlokas HaTanoim, whether or not two judges or three. Bitsua Bishlosha, Divrei Rabbi Meir. Right? That Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that you require three judges. Now, what's fascinating, of course, is what does the Gemara call Pshara here? Bitsua. Rabbi Meir holds three judges. The Chachamim Omrim, Pshara, the Yachid. Right? So here there's an interesting comment of the Yad Ramah. Yad Ramah, and Tosa Rosh says this also, the Ramah is actually two dayos, but we'll just focus on one for a moment. Why there's a difference whether you need three dayan or one dayan, right? But why a different characterization of whether we're talking about Pshara or Bitsua, right? So what he suggests is, he has two opposite suggestions actually, but the one which seems to be the more popular one in the Rishonim and even in the Ramah is that Bitsua is, it's exactly the issue that we're talking about. Bitsua is a form of din. And you want to be very careful and calibrate, you know, that you divide things up in a way that will, at minimum, minimize loss for both sides. Now, you're trying to, according to the rules, you know, the tzedek. Pshara is like lukewarm water. Now, it isn't a compromise based on strength or justice. It's based on just, you know, being pragmatic and working. Okay. Anyways, originally the Gemara said, "Lekula amma makshinim pshara ledin." Originally the Gemara thought that whatever you say about din, you're going to say about pshara. So the machlokas, whether you need three dayanim or one, is in pshara, reflects the same machlokas in din. So the Gemara says, "My la ba'al kamifli, mar savar din b'shlosha, mar savar din b'shnayim." So the Gemara says, "No, maybe not. Kula alma din b'shlosha." Everybody agrees that din requires three. The Hocha Bahaka Miflegi. Mar Savar Makshinam Pshara Ledin. Mar Savar Lo Makshinam Pshara Ledin. The argument is, indeed, whether we compare Pshara and Din. So now the comment of the Rama and the Tosa Rosh becomes very significant. Right? Because really, the debate whether three or everybody agrees that three, you know, how many dayanim do you need in din? Three. And yet, there's an argument whether makshinam pshara ledin or not. So the one who holds makshinam pshara ledin, that's who? Rav Meir. He's the one who calls this bitzua. The one who says lo makshinam pshara ledin is the one who says that it's pshara and you get away with one. So that's exactly the point. Meaning, if you hold makshinam pshara ledin, so you're saying this is a form of din. And therefore it has to be very precise. It's bitzua. Right? The other one is saying it's haba shalom bin adam l'chavero. It's a pshara. So, you know, one dayan can oversee that too. What's interesting is that even according to the mandamar, that you require three, it's still interesting that there could be an important difference between din and pshar. We mentioned this last time, and now I will document it this time. Look at Tosas Dibur Matzel Bitsua Begimel. Tosas says, Bitsua Begimel, Afal Gav de Makshinan Pshara Ladin, even according to this, is the Mandamar Makshinan Pshara Ladin, the way you equate them, Lav Lekol Davar Makshinan. We don't equate it for everything. Why? Tibidin azlinan basaruba imshnaim amram zakai ve'achid amr chayiv o ipcha. As we know, there's majority rule when it comes to din. Ubipshara lo azli basaruba ad shiaskim ushlashtan ledea or ledas echad v'achas. Kedisa perik basar de avadazara. There it says, kedishaymi beitlasa afilu tremi gotlasa. Kid Amri Beit Lasa, Ad Amri Beit Lasa. When there's a Shuma, it's two out of three, if you have three. But when it's a proclamation, right, then it is all three. Now, what's interesting is that the Riaz, who I mentioned before, we don't have the full Riaz printed in the Shulta Gibarim, as I mentioned. What some of the things that are missing are, number one, the Shulta Gibarim makes it perfect, even clearer, that the pshara of Dayanim is based on the principles of the law. Number two, he equates the Sugya Lamed Beis with the Sugya Navav, as I mentioned. He says the makar for pshara here on Navav is the Gemara later on Lamed Beis. But the third kiddush of the Riaz is that he disagrees with this Tosas. Most of the Rishonim agree with Tosas. He says it's not true that in pshara that you require all three Dayanim. You need to require a unanimous decision. Maybe you require a majority. Now, what's fascinating is, for the Bali Tosas, so why wouldn't majority be enough? I mean, the Riaz is saying, this is a Din Torah like any other Din Torah. You know, there could be Tos. It's about applying the law. And why shouldn't we say majority rules? But if we think that it's a little bit of a different, even if it is a kind of a Din, but what we might say is there... This is something that we talked about. We talked about Bezen Nota, right? We talked about the fact that, if you remember, normally require an odd-numbered Bezden because you have to have the decision-making capacity built in within the Bezden, right? But the Mishnah says here, and it's repeated in Megillah, that for Shuma, sometimes you use an even number, right? 10 people. So the question is, how come? Right? That's Tosfos Das and Erchin and Megillah and the Rashba and the Ritva. We discussed this when we talked about Bezen Nota. So I think what I mentioned at the time was that they say in the name of the Beis Halevi a very interesting and good answer. And that is that when there are two possible decisions, Chayav or Zakai, right? So there's a good reason to have or to require Bezen Nota. Right? However, let's say you have a situation where there's more than two possible outcomes. For example, Shuma. Right? If I'm estimating a field or something, are there only two options? There could be three options. It could be five options. Right? So having an odd number when there's more than it's not just not a choice between two answers. It doesn't help you so much. Oh, so there's a whole discussion here about Rashi and the Marsha. I'm not going to go into details right now here in this Rashi and Vav Mem Aleph and the Marsha. So the same thing comes up with regard to Pshara. Namely, do you need a Bezenota, right, for Pshara? For that matter, what I'm suggesting is maybe it also impacts whether majority even rules in Pshara. Because there aren't only two answers in Pshara either.
But there's only three Dayanim, not ten.
Okay. No, that's fine. No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is it comes up, the Bezenota part of it comes up with the two. Like, how can two be okay? At least it should be one or three. And yet there are some views that say that Pshara, you know, is two. That's the Rashi and the Marsha here. So some people say, well, that's fine. How can you not have a Bezenota? The answer is maybe Bezenota isn't a requirement in Pshara. Because in Pshara, in theory, there could be three suggestions. There could be five suggestions. Similarly, now I'm applying it to a different thing. Normally we say majority rule, right? So one of the explanations for that was the Shita of the Tumim. We talked about it again in Eini Yodea. The Tumim says that we normally say Enochem Bamanach Harov, right? Motzim Mechivar Levaraya. So you shouldn't be able to get away with a majority. You should need a unanimous decision. How do you get away with a majority? So the Reb Chaim has his answer. The Tumim's answer was that when things are mutually exclusive, right, then the miut is command alaisa. When it's not, that's Reb Chaim said, the Bezim is a unit. The Tum says something a little bit different. The Tum says like this. In Dine Mamanis, right, in a typical case when you have Enochem B'Mamanach HaRov, or Motzim Mechavar Levaraya, you have a Rov and you have a miut. And the Rov and the miut don't contradict each other. Let's say most women give birth after 9 months. Right? And some give birth after 7 months. Those are two different populations, as we discussed. Those are two populations. Most people don't know what day of the month it is. They get mixed up in the Ibur HaShana. Right? And there are a few who do. Those are two different populations. Some people buy oxen for a steak dinner, and some buy it to work in the field. Right? Two different populations. That's not a stira. And if there's a rov and there's a miyun, and the rule is Enochem B'Mamanach HaRov. However, says the Tumim, when it comes to a din Torah, you're either chayiv or you're a zakai. There are no prisoners here. So there aren't two populations. One is right and one is wrong. But I mean in the psak, in the mishpat echad yelachem, one is right and one is wrong. So that's why we go by the rov. That's what Tosis meant in Bava Kama. When Tosis says that when it comes to dayanim, the miyut is command alesa. Oh, so the point I'm trying to make, I'm suggesting something now. And that is that when Tosa says here that a pshara, we don't go by rov. We need the unanimous decision of the three. So is that I think there are two very different explanations that we could give. One is you need greater wisdom in pshara than in din, because in din you're just trying to apply the existing law, right? And there's law, there's precedents. You know the law, and you're supposed to paskin, and you can paskin on the basis of rov as well. Right? And it's a unit of Bezdin, and so on. But, just like the Rama said, tzedek, tzedek, tirdo, if you need extra wisdom, extra tzedek for pshara, if it's a form of din. Right? Because you're applying the concepts, right? But you're applying it even more ambitiously in a way, more fairly. So maybe there, what you might say is that rov isn't enough. You really require unanimous proclamation and decision. That's one reason. Then I'm now suggesting a second reason, and that is, when it comes to a situation where there's a clear-cut decision to be made between Zakai and Chayiv, so we go by Rov. We don't need Kol. Rov is enough. But where there are numerous options, there's no Rov, because it doesn't have to be a Rov within the Bezdin. You can end up with 3-2. Once there's no din of Rov, because Rove isn't foolproof anymore, you might have to require call. Either way, this is an important distinction between Pshara and Din, even according to the Mandamar, Makshinan Pshara Ladin. Okay, let's continue. So the Gemara says, Lema Tlasa Tanoi, the Pshara. Maybe there are three Tanaim in Pshara. Right? The Mar Sava B'Shosha, Mar Sava B'Shnai, Mar Sava B'Yachid. We find people think the Pshara is with three, with two, and with one. So the Gemara says, Om Rav Acha Breid Ravika, V'Tem Rav Yemar, Bar Shlamya, Manda Martrei, Afilu B'Chad Nami. No, it's really two. Whoever holds that two works, holds that one works. Haidakam Martrei, Ki Hechid Lahav Alei, Sahadi. The reason they mention two is not because two as a yichus number in Dayanim, but two so that they can also serve as edim that a pshara was made. Okay, so the Gemara then goes on to say, Om Ravashi, Shma Mina, Pshara, Eina, Tzricha, Kenyan, Disokadaita, Tzricha, Kenyan, Lemanda, Mar Tzricha, right? Klasa, Lamali, Tesagi, Betray. Vilikne mine. The Gemara says that obviously, if indeed there is a view that you need three dayanim for pshara, it must be that pshara doesn't require a kinyan. In other words, that to be binding upon the parties, they have to agree to a pshara, but they don't have to make a formal kinyan accepting it. Because if they did, then why wouldn't it be enough to have two witnesses, right, who attest to the fact that they committed to the pshara, and that would serve the function of binding them, you know, being mischai of them to this result. That's what the Gemara says. Yet the Gemara says, v'hilchasa pshara tzricha kenyan. So is the Gemara's maskana that you don't need three dayanim, and that's why pshara tzricha kenyan? Not at all. So look at the Rashi for a minute, and you'll see exactly what we've been discussing, perhaps, is this discussion in the Gemara, according to Rashi's understanding. So, the Gemara says as follows. Tisagi betray velikni minei. The kivin de kanu minei, says Rashi, since it's a kinyan, sudar, that he's mischayev to the pshara, lamali bezdin. Right? What do you need? Why do you need a bezdin at all? Lo tehe yala matana bialma. Umbidaito. Behemis kayemes. Let's just make this a commitment. Ella, lahochi bin antlosaliapis koch bezdin. Afagav lo kanemine, lo nehedru. So it sounds like what Rashi is saying is that the Gemara is weighing how Pshara works. Is Pshara a form of din, in which case you need gimel dayanim a bezdin, and in which case you wouldn't need a kinyan, because you don't need a kinyan in a din Torah. In a regular din Torah, do you need a kinyan? No, I mean, they come to court, because they have to come to court, and the dayanim imposes upon them the din. They don't have to make a kinyan committing themselves to the din, right? So the point is, our two options, the Gemara is presenting two options. The Gemara, at this point, the Gemara seems to be saying, well, if there's a Kinyan Sudar, then that proves that Pshara is not at all din. What is it, to use the language of Rashi? Pshara is Matana Bialma, right? Umidaito, right? Mihimiskayemis, based on the Kinyan. But then you don't need three Dayanim. If you need three Dayanim, then what you're saying is that Pshara is a form of din, and for the same reason, you wouldn't need a kinyan. But when the Gemara's conclusion is v'hilchasa pshara tzricha kinyan, Rashi says v'afilu nasis b'shlosha. So that leaves us a little bit perplexed. Now there are Rishonim, some of the Or Zeruah, the Bahag, others who really paskind that Pshara only needs a kinyan if you don't have three dayanim. If you have three dayanim, you don't need a kinyan. If you have less than three dayanim, then you need a kinyan. But Rashi here is saying that Pshara requires a kinyan even with three dayanim. So there are really two options open to us. One is that what Rashi is saying is Pshara is basically shalom or ischaivos, and it's based on a kinyan, Why do you need three dayanim? The maskana. The answer is, this schaivus takes a, or this matana takes a particular form, right? Meaning, what's going on is, I didn't just say I'm going to give you, Reuven didn't say to Shimon, I like you, I want to give you a matana, right? What happened was, they're in dispute, and, the way this is really working is they're going to like a mock simulated, dayanim. But it isn't really dayanim because they're not operating according to strict din, right? These three dayanim are going to decide, how to dispose of this case. So in a way, and whatever the Bali dinim are signing up in advance and saying, whatever the dayanim come up with, we'll do. Now, is that din? Not really. It's matana. But this matana is taking the simulated form of a kind of din. Or at least through, it's a matana that is established, or a shalom, which is imposed by what looks like three dayanim. But not really three dayanim. They're a simulation of three dayanim. It's just a mechanism to create a matana.
The matana is from one baal din to the other.
I mean, whoever's conceding his rights, let's say Alpi Din, Reuven would have to pay Shimon $100, and now in the Pshara it's going to be something different. So whatever that discrepancy is, that's a kind of matana. So it looks like, it's going through Dayanim and so on, but it's really a simulation, and really it's a Kinyan Suta. Or maybe the Pshat is different. Maybe the pshat is that really, 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 pshara is a din. And the dayanim are really dayanim. But because the default, the standard, is not pshara but din, right, in order to commit to pshara as a form of din, you have to make a kinyan sudar. The kinyan sudar isn't on the disposition of the money. The kinyan sudar is a kind of commitment to a certain process. For example, there's a major debate. There are two very interesting issues that come up in the Rishonim here, which we're going to discuss. One is, when does this pshara take place? I'm sorry, wrong. When does this kinyan take place? Does the kinyan take place before the details of the final agreement are agreed to by the dayanim? Right? Or only after. Right? The more we think that the kinyan is about a commitment to a certain procedure, a different kind of din, then it should take place earlier. The more we think it's like a matana, it could still take place earlier in theory, right? Let's fill in the blanks, but it's easier to explain if it takes place later. That's one issue. The other issue is, what the Rishonim, the big long Tosas here discusses, and the other Rishonim too, and that is, what is the relationship between this halakha and the din of whether or not mechila, tzricha, kinyan, and kol tara kula? Normally, we require kinyanim to transfer, objects, to make commitments, and so on. But when you're conceding something, when you're relinquishing something, you're letting something go, that's called mechila, do you also need a kinyan? So that's a debate. There are many Rishonim who say, is this sugya of Pshara Tzricha Kinyan part of the sugya of Mechila in Tzricha Kinyan? Or not? The more we think that Pshara Tzricha or Ein Tzricha Kinyan depends on, fundamentally, Mechila Tzricha or Ein Tzricha Kinyan, the more we're treating Pshara as an agreement, as a shalom, as a hezder, an arrangement. Whereas, if we really think that pshara is a form of din, what's it got to do with the sugya of mechila or ein tzricha kinyan? Except maybe by common denominator, but not the same thing at all. Mechila tzricha kinyan is about disposing of assets or rights. I have a certain prerogative, I'm conceding it. What does that have to do with pshara? In pshara, I'm just authorizing an alternative to din. So this big long tosis is basically all about this. For example, you see the beginning of it. We'll read the whole thing. Tzricha kinyan. So it says, "Im nefarish de kinyan shal pshara osin kodem pshara, The konim zem bizeh lasos kemoshi omra dayanim hein l'shalim hein limchal ein l'daktik mikan the bialma mechila tzricha kenyan. Right? We bring in both of those points. It also says that when the kenyan will take place will be relevant to the question whether this is a typical example of mechila tzricha or ein tzricha kenyan or not. We'll have to see the details of how they set it up. But at least the discussion is partly this discussion. If you're going to say you need three dayanim and you're going to say you need kinyan, is the kinyan basically a way of committing to this form of din? Or there's not really a form of din, that's just a simulation. That's just a method of getting to the matana part. It's really all kinyan, it's really all matana, it's really all mechila. Yeah?
Well, when there's a deal between the two sides, and, yeah. and they reach a shore, but one guy was telling that you owe me $100, and yeah. now he's only going to get 50. So doesn't he need a formal mechila for the other 50 that he's giving up?
Well, that's implicit in the original acceptance of the... That's what we're discussing here. That's exactly what we're discussing. Is that mechila ein tzricha kinyan or not? That's exactly it. So we'll discuss that next week, and we'll also discuss the next Gemara, where the Gemara says, when is it too late to switch, and Aaron and Moshe. We'll probably skip the Tosas details first and then finish up the rest, and then come